In this episode of Nightmare Echoes, Eleazar and Jesse cover the 2010 James Wan movie Insidious, while also referencing other movies such as Hereditary, Stir of Echoes, Poltergeist, and The Shining. So spoiler warning. Also in the coming weeks, we're covering The Craft, Pan's Labyrinth, Night of the Living Dead, and Constantine. So please subscribe if you don't want to miss any of those. Enjoy the episode. Everybody, and welcome to Nightmare Echoes. I'm your host, Eleazar, and I'm joined by co-host Jesse. Jesse, how's it going?
It's doing fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're covering Insidious 2010 today, directed by James Wan, written by Lee Whannell, who also plays Specs in this movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you knew that. He's also wrote Saws 1 through 3, and also was in the first Saw as a character named Adam. It also stars Patrick Wilson as Josh Lambert. He's also in the Conjuring series, which is also a James Wan directed movie, which is funny. Rose Byrne as Renee, Ty Simpkins as Dalton. Dalton also starred in Jurassic World, and he was the little kid in Iron Man 3.
Okay.
Which I liked a lot. This had a budget of $1.5 million and made over $100 million in the box office.
Wow.
Like, that's a profit, right?
Wow.
So you're going to have some sequels when that happens. They're going to demand some sequels. If you wanted to give, like, a spoiler-free review before starting, is there anything you'd want to say about the movie?
Yeah, what should we say? It appears to be a haunting movie, right? Like, that's the impression it gives. You've got a family that is in what seems to be perhaps a haunted house that they've just moved into. The family members are, of course, suffering due to this, but, you know, the story unfolds. They take various measures to try and solve this problem, and those measures don't immediately succeed, and again, without spoiling anything, there further details unravel. We meet characters who know more, and soon we do in fact find out what is going on and why and how it has to be, you know, resolved. And then we get a climactic scene where we see everything hit the fan, I guess.
Sure. Okay. All right. So if you haven't seen it, I think it's a good watch. I think the plot is something you wouldn't want spoiled for you. I think you'd want
to
watch it.
That's why I'm trying so hard to be vague. It's so hard. It's so difficult.
I know. I'm just telling the audience. Listeners, go watch it. If you haven't seen it, don't let us ruin it for you because we're going to spoil the whole thing. And I really liked going into this one not knowing anything about the movie. It was not ruined for me by anyone and I got to enjoy it. I saw it for the first time last year, even though it's like a, you know, at that time, a 13-year-old movie. But I got to see it without it being spoiled, and I think it's worth it. So please go see it if you haven't. We're about to spoil the whole thing. So the movie opens. We see Dalton, who's one of the three kids. They have two sons and a daughter, Dalton, Foster, and Callie. We see Dalton sleeping, and we hear creepy music, and we see the face of a woman wearing all black holding a candle, and she is dubbed by the community as the Bride in Black.
Okay.
I'll say all the names of these guys as we get to them. They all have weird, could have been better names. And then we cut right to a title card and we have some credits.
Can I just say that title card, that is one of the better title cards I've ever seen.
Yeah, the music was intense.
Yeah, that's part of it, but also just, it's the whole experience, right?
Sure.
Yeah, you can get my attention or lose me very early on in a movie, and the title card is so red, and it's so evil, and the music is so evil, and I was like, you know, it gives you that immediate visceral sense of, oh, this is going to be good, right?
Yeah. And we get a bunch of snapshots during this of like places in the movie that will be creepy, but the music is letting us know this is going to be creepy.
Yeah, the music is great. Yeah. Fantastic.
After the credits, we meet Renee, who's the mother of this family. She wakes up because Josh is snoring. She goes downstairs. We see that there's all these boxes around this house because the family is still moving into the house. They're new to this house. Renee puts some books on a bookshelf and sits down to look at a photo album. We see a wedding picture of her and Josh at their wedding. And then behind her, because the way the camera's filmed, you can't see him until he speaks. Dalton is downstairs. He says he doesn't like his room. While they're looking at pictures, they see pictures of Renee when she he's younger, but they don't have any pictures of Josh when he's younger. Then we hear the baby girl Callie start crying. So she's got it like, all right, time to get up. So she starts, you know, making breakfast. She's on the phone trying to connect with the billing department. She's trying to feed the three children, Dalton, Foster, and Callie. Josh is upstairs getting himself ready for work. He finds a gray hair, yanks it out. He comes downstairs and she's obviously struggling to feed the children. And she's on the phone trying to handle their bills at the same time. And Josh walks in all nonchalantly. He's like, I could be the billing department, making like a subtle joke and looking at the kids like, that's a good one, right? And I'm like, dude, she's obviously struggling to help her out here.
Yeah.
He tries to bite a fruit and finds out it's wax. It's not real fruit on the table. She goes to the other room and sees that her books that she just put on the shelf are all over the floor. She comes back in. The kids claim they didn't do it.
Once again, we have this tactic of using a little bit of marital tension as a way to create early tension in a movie, you know?
Yeah, and then Josh starts to leave, and she's like, hey, aren't you taking the kids to school? And he goes, oh, I can't. I have a meeting. So she's just like left like, wait a minute, I had things I was supposed to do, and now I have to upset my day because you didn't even tell me this previous made plans that we were going to go through.
Yeah.
Now you can't.
Which is
be there.
Kind of a dick move.
Yeah. It is a dick move, right. He's not being a good supporting husband here.
But he's also not like cold and absent like freaking Steve in Hereditary.
Hereditary, sure. We see that Renee is writing her own song. She's playing on the piano. When she starts to hear Callie, the baby, crying over the baby monitor, she goes upstairs to burp her, and we get this weird feeling when the attic door opens, and she goes upstairs to look at it. We see that the chain to turn on the light is so high that even she has to step on the ladder to pull the chain down to turn on the light in the attic, which I think is just poorly set up. And it's just there to establish that in a little bit that's going to be important. And then one of the rungs on the ladder is broken.
And why would you leave a ladder there with broken rungs? Like, take it down.
I almost thought that they just moved in. They didn't have time for her to do anything.
Yeah.
She's busy handling the kids, trying to work on her own stuff.
Sure.
I think she just didn't have time to do it yet. But their house is really nice. It's massive.
It is. And in that scene where they, you know, you can see the furnace in the attic with the fire in it. It goes so well with the whole like red fiery kind of theme of this movie, I think, that keeps popping up like in the title card. And
sure.
You know,
this house, I feel like, and the director said he picked this house to be instantly the audience to feel like, oh, of course it's haunted. Look at that thing.
Yeah.
Like it's old, it's creepy, it creaks. Of course it's haunted. Everybody's downstairs. Renee is looking for her sheet music. Dalton's the only one upstairs. Josh tells Renee that, yes, he definitely knows that they packed the sheet music. And she's like, yeah, I'm the one that packed it. I know that we packed it. I just can't find it. He keeps trying to come up with ideas, but he is at least in the scene holding Callie. She's crying. He's trying to comfort Callie. So at least he's helping as a parent here in this scene. She's going everywhere trying to find her music. But when Dalton's upstairs, the attic door opens again. He feels called to walk up there. He tries to turn on the light. He climbs the ladder. That rung on the ladder breaks and he falls. Everybody downstairs hears as he cries out in pain. They run up there.
Was he crying out in pain or crying out in fear? Because I think it's a little unclear.
Yeah, I think the parents think it's pain.
Because we see him for a second. We see him for a minute laying there and he doesn't appear to be in pain, right? And he's not making any sound. And it's a while before he screams.
Okay, right. You're right. I think the parents think that he's in pain.
Yeah.
And that's why he cried. They see that the ladder has been broken. And they're like, why were you up here, buddy? And they tell him that he's not supposed to come up here anymore. And as Renee's kind of like cleaning up the mess a little bit, as Josh carries Dalton downstairs, she looks over and her box of sheet music has been placed in the attic. And we don't know who did it. They tell Dalton, don't explore anymore. Josh points to a picture that he drew and says, hey, even though you're a superhero, you're not invincible. And these pictures come into play way later, but we see that they exist. But we don't really focus on them, and neither do the parents. They don't really look at them and see what they're saying as of yet. Back in their bedroom, Josh is asking Renee if she put the box in the attic, and she's like, don't even start with me. Kind of like just stops that line of questioning, like, I did not do it, but I don't want to get in this argument with you. But Josh says that the next day he will put a lock on the door. He says that he just doesn't like feeling helpless when those kinds of things happen. Renee jokes about just putting dog leashes on the kids.
The kids.
Yeah. And he says, I'll stop by the pet store tomorrow.
That's right.
I think this is awesome. Renee thanks Josh for letting her spend time on her music. And he says that he loves her music. She says, which one's your favorite? He's like, the one about me. And she says, they're all about you. And he makes like a joking, like sings lyrics to a song.
Yes. We get this nice, cute, coupley stuff going on. on.
Yeah.
Even though we started out with the marital tension-y stuff.
Sure.
And that does come back later, but it's like, I guess it's establishing that this is not one of those situations where their marriage is destroyed. It's just, there's tension, but it's not.
Yeah. I mean,
you know.
Marriage can be stressful.
Everybody in this family is on the same team.
I love that.
Unlike, yeah. Some other movies.
Yeah, but I like the song he's making up, like, he's so good looking, has such big muscles, something like that. And she's like, shut up.
And watch, his song's the one that becomes a hit.
Right. At night, we're focused on Dalton sleeping, and in the dark, we can barely see his shape. Watching him, and I think we see some claws, like in the dark.
Yeah, okay.
The next morning, getting ready for school, Renee is cooking breakfast, and she asks Josh to go get Dalton up. Josh grabs his clothes. He's like, come on, champ, let's get up. He tries to wake him up, but the more he shakes him, he will not wake up at all, and he starts to get scared. Then we cut to them at the hospital, where we learn that he's in a coma. The doctor says there's no brain trauma. The doctor's never seen anything like it, and there's no medical explanation why he's in a coma, but they're going to run some more tests. The doctor gets a phone call, he's got to run, and Josh is like, but how long will these tests take? And we cut to 3 months later. We're
about to start the tests. No.
No, 3 months later, they finally have brought him home because there's nothing more they can do at the hospital. We see a nurse explain to Renee the procedure on how to install a nasogastric tube down Dalton's nose and throat. He has some IV bags set up there for nutrition. Later, Renee is playing some music, but she can't seem to focus because she's worried. This is where she hears a voice on the baby monitor.
Yeah. So this scene, man, like, I actually... This is a very scary scene.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really scary.
It reminds me of, spoiler for Stir of Echoes. Mm-hmm. Stir of Echoes, where the babysitter hears the kid she's babysitting talking to a ghost on that baby monitor because he doesn't know he's being spied on. And then they start talking about the babysitter.
Yeah.
It's pretty creepy. But in this movie, there's whispers there. She doesn't go up to her baby right away. She stands up, walks into the hallway, and is listening really close.
Like,
why wouldn't you go to your baby right away? But you hear there's nothing you can do about it, and she still doesn't go upstairs, and it continues with the spirit saying, I want it. Give it to me. Give it to me. And then the voice yells, no! That's when Renee drops the monitor and runs up the stairs.
Well, I was going to say, too, that, like, if this scene had not had the big shout now, I think it would have been actually better.
Yeah.
That may be my own bias toward subtlety, but
Sure.
I think it's better. It was the subtle whispering was scary. The shout was, it kind of snapped, kind of ruined the subtle, like, you know,
because you could have been like, did it really happen? Did she imagine
this? Exactly, exactly.
And when later, when her husband's like, well, maybe you just picked up interference. It could have been interference.
Right. And, yeah. And but there's no uncertainty when it's shouting so loud that it, you know.
Well, she gets up there and Callie's standing up in the crib, but there's no one there. She even checks the closet, but there's no one there. At night, she's tucking Foster in and she sees that he had earned an award and it had today's date on it. And she wants to know why he didn't tell them. And I get the sense that Foster was just worried about bringing attention to himself when his brother is the really one that is in danger now. And he didn't want to bring up the fact that he got an award because his parents have enough to worry about.
Yeah,
it was a little sad.
It kind of makes sense. I could see it, but it is sad.
He asks if he could switch rooms because he doesn't like when Dalton wakes up in the middle of the night and starts walking around.
And that's a wonderfully, wonderfully creepy line.
Just confuses Renee. She doesn't know what to make of that.
And they don't really show you that either. It's mm-hmm. only alluded to, which is a beautiful, beautiful technique,
yeah,
I think.
Many horror movies have kids see things that the adults can't see.
Yeah, but the fact that we never see it, and it's only something that's alluded to it, because it lets your mind fill in the details, right? It's awesome.
And then we cut to night. We do see Foster staring at his brother from across the hall. He's like, got the perfect angle from his door. He slowly closes the door. Then we show Renee in their bedroom telling Josh that she heard voices in the monitor. This is where Josh laughs it off, says it's probably interference, but then we suddenly hear banging from downstairs. Josh tells Renee to stay there while he runs downstairs, banging on the front door. He turns on the porch light, but then the light kind of goes out. So he gets a flashlight, shines it out there. He opens the front door without the alarm going off, which to me means the alarm wasn't set. They were just going to go to bed without the alarm being set. Hmm. Because when he closes the door, then he programs the alarm to go on.
Yeah, that is strange.
Right?
The thing that I thought was interesting, aside from the fact that they have the biggest door I've ever seen.
It's pretty big.
Is the fact that it seems like a lot of the doors in this house lock from the wrong side. Like there's a key in the lock on the inside of the door.
Is there?
There is. Huh. I swear. I mean, unless I am just blind and crazy.
Is it a double-sided lock?
I guess it is. But there are other locks. It looked like there were other doors in the movie that locked from the wrong side, like doors to bedrooms that locked from the outside or something. I thought, and maybe my brain's playing tricks on me, but I noticed several times, like, isn't that the wrong side for the lock to be on?
Well, the only scene that I could think of that I remember is later when they're trying to break into their child's room. It is locked from the inside of the room, and they're trying to bust in from the outside of the room, which would be on the correct side.
Well, that would be the correct side, I agree. Yeah. So, I might have gotten confused.
So in the scene's still going. Renee hears crying from Callie's room. She goes over to Callie's room. The room, when we enter it, is super red toned, and we see a spirit on the other side of the curtains, and this spirit has been labeled the long-haired fiend by the community.
Uh-huh.
She screams. Josh runs upstairs. When Josh gets there, the room is less red. It's more white toned with a little bit of red lighting, but there's no one there. Just then, the alarm goes off. Josh runs downstairs, and the front door is wide open. Renee gets Foster and Callie, and they all go into Dalton's room to be together in safety.
And this whole scene is just absolutely terrifying. Like, it's done really well. You're scared the whole time.
Josh grabs a poker and looks around the house for whomever could have broken in. He's turning on lights as he goes, and then the alarm goes off again. He runs back. The door's wide open again. So I think he assumes that the person, whoever broke in, now left again. That's why the door was open again, because after this, they just all go to bed.
Yeah. It's very upsetting. I wouldn't be able to sleep after that. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, I mean, literally, after this movie, I had to keep my closet doors closed at night to sleep. I do want to say, spoilers for the second movie, but without going into detail, this scene has a whole different meaning in the second movie. And I can't wait to get to there. Yeah, I don't want to ruin it, but I can't wait till you get there.
All right, yeah.
All right, so the next day, Josh is at his teacher job. And the class is ending. We see that he's drinking a lot of coffee because he obviously didn't get enough sleep. He calls Renee to tell her that he has to stay late to grade some tests and that she doesn't need to wait up for him. But I get the feeling that he's lying to her. And he's
definitely.
Yeah, he's just avoiding the problem. He has an excuse to stay away from home.
Which is really terrible to me, because it's like it's his job to protect them, right? But he's just going to leave them to whatever this freaking thing is.
Yeah.
Like that he knows it's there, and to the point that he's scared of it, and he's just going to freaking sacrifice them. I feel like that's almost too much, you know.
Yeah.
Like it's almost too heartless.
A little bit.
I understand he's scared and that he would want to get away somehow, but like I don't know. I feel like that's almost pushing what I would believe.
Later, she gives a line that he has a history of trying to avoid the stress.
And I know that line, and I understand that. I just think it's too far. Like there are things you might do.
Sure.
But I don't think you would just abandon your family to the thing that you're afraid of. You would maybe take the whole family to a hotel or something, but I just don't think you would just be like, y'all deal with it. Y'all just hope you don't die.
The poltergeist method, take the whole family to a motel.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Also, can I point out on his chalkboard?
Yeah.
In that scene, there is the saw guy, the jigsaw guy.
Yeah.
And the number 8. And I don't know what that means.
So it has it also has the name of a lot of the cast there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're like names on the chalkboard, a lot of the cast. But the saw was because Lee Whannell, who plays Specs, also wrote Saw.
Right.
And plays Adam in the Saw movies.
Right. So that makes sense. But I was like, why is there an 8?
I'm sure that's in trivia somewhere, and I forgot to...
Okay.
Write it down.
Well, I was wondering as soon as I saw it. It was very conspicuous. It was not very hidden.
The next day, Renee is speaking to her nurse about Dalton's recovery chances, and the nurse tries to give her hope, saying that if fate thinks it can mess with you, that it messed with the wrong badass chick. Like, you know, you're strong enough to do it. And the nurse is about to change Dalton's sheets, but Renee sends her away. He's like, I'll get it. And I feel like, yes, Renee wants to feel useful. And like she can do something for her son, but she's obviously overwhelmed, and any parent would be in this situation with her kid being in a coma.
Yeah.
If you are paying for the nurse's help, let the nurse do her job and let the nurse change the sheets and help you out in the stuff. But because she sent her away, she's the only one that you know, is able to discover what first looks like blood, but is eventually, you know, the handprint of the lipstick face demon, which is the name that the community has given him. Although Dalton later calls him man with fire in his face. Neither name is amazing.
I'm not crazy about that.
Yeah. But unlike other horror movies, all these demons and entities for these movies are made up for these films. They don't pull from culture, which is interesting.
And it's fine.
Yeah.
In the context, I think it's because they're just random ghosts, most of them. They're not like, I think it's different if you're going to claim some character is very important and special, but these are just like random, random nobody spirits that are just dangerous.
Right. Josh fell asleep in his class and he checks a voicemail. Renee's asking where he's at. He arrives home and Renee's outside and asks why he's been coming home late every night this week. And he says that he tries to say, well, I'm having to make money for Dalton's medicine treatment. It's not like it pays for itself.
Yeah.
So he's using that as an excuse, which is a little unfair because she's obviously working hard to take care of the children.
Very unfair.
Yeah, okay, you're right. It's very unfair. He's kind of being a jerk there. He says, I'm dealing with this too, that I'm scared, but you want me to believe that this house is haunted? She's like, I'm tired of pretending it's not, basically. Like, I'm thinking of that meme. Like, then she says, well, if you deal with the things in your own way, here, deal with this. And she gives him the sheet with the red handprint on it.
And hadn't he already seen something by this point that was pretty clear during the whole...
He hasn't seen a spirit yet.
Okay, no.
But he hasn't heard a voice.
At the very least, he knows someone broke into the house.
He does.
And that is part of why I didn't think him just abandoning them to deal with everything was realistic. Like,
sure.
You know someone's able to break into your house. You're not going to like, yeah.
Okay. I get you. So that night, he's sleeping on the couch.
Well, yeah.
We pan through watching Foster sleep. We see an image of us walking down a deep red lit hallway with a lot of candles. We see more of Foster sleeping. We see a figure outside watching him. And then Renee wakes up, and this was all part of her dream. Although part of that was foreshadowing. Now, not in the dream, but in her bedroom alone, Renee sees someone pacing outside their house on the second story. Then on the third pass, the long-haired fiend is inside their room. She starts calling for Josh quietly and then screams when he's inside the room. And the long-haired fiend goes after her. She jumps off the other side of her bed, heads to the wall. When Josh gets up there, we see that Callie is also in the room. She's awake now screaming because Renee wanted the baby closer to her because she was screaming it woke up the baby. But Josh wakes up, doesn't see anything through the window. Renee tells Josh, don't you dare not believe me. And then her pleas turn into begging. She asks him to please believe her. And she tells them that they have to move, that she can't spend another night in this house. So then we see them moving into a house that says for lease. So I think they own this first one and they're leasing the second one.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
I thought they I didn't notice that. I thought they moved in with her mom or something.
No, her mom is moving them in because there are scenes where someone inquires to where the other children are and they say, oh, they're with Lorraine. And so they're at her mom's house. Oh,
I see that the kids are with her.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
That's why I was confused.
Yeah, you're good. But that house on the front, it says leasing.
Yeah.
And so they're there with the new house. Renee's unpacking. This is where we meet Josh's mother, Lorraine Lambert, who is there to, you know, help moving in. She seems like a nice, loving parent.
She's an interesting character. I like her personality.
I do too.
She's got character.
Yeah, she's played by Barbara Hershey, and she was in Black Swan and also Stephen King's Riding the Bullet.
Okay.
Which are movies I see.
And I have not.
She looks through a family picture, and she comments that she can't believe she got Josh to stand still for a family photo.
Yeah.
That's her second allude to Josh in photos. Renee says she can't believe she's moving again. They just did this, but it was obviously her idea. But Lorraine seems like very supportive. She's like, look, I don't think you're crazy. Nobody, not me or anybody, knows what you're going through right now. She's like, do whatever you need to do to survive this. And I think that was awesome.
On that subject, I'm complaining about the dad, you know, not believing her. I feel like that didn't last very long. You know what I mean?
It comes back a little bit. But yeah,
it does, and in an annoying way. But it's at least they didn't fully commit to him just being a hardened skeptic, even when he's clearly seeing things he doesn't have an explanation for. You know,
sure.
Although they kind of there's definitely a scene later that was very annoying to watch. Personally, I was like,
Well, when we get there, I have comments on what maybe is happening that maybe it's not his fault. So we see the new layout of the house, and this house looks like a happy house. It's lit up really nice. I think the director said the audience is supposed to think, oh, there's no way this house could be haunted.
And it did come across that way.
Yeah. She's walking through the house. She's cleaning up the mess. We see that Foster's allowed to eat on his bed because he left food there. And I'm thinking, no, not in my house, buddy. Like, that is not happening in my house.
That's the real horror movie.
Right. No kid is eating on their bed. They eat at the table, and that is it.
Coming soon, child with crackers in bed.
That's awesome. So she's cleaning up. She's walking to the kitchen. You know the scene where she grabs the trash bag to take it out?
Mm-hmm.
On the way to the trash bag, the little boy is hiding by the coats. He's like playing hide and seek. There's no music to cue you in. There's nothing other than him just standing there with his face against the wall like he's hiding to let the audience know, hey, you missed something. Because normally there'd be like a piano playing or something to signify it. So I had to watch it on the second time I rewound it. I was like, wait. On my second viewing, I saw him. He's hiding there. It's insane. She goes to take the trash outside. As she looks inside the house, a record starts playing an old-timey, happy song. And there's a kid inside. Looks like he's dressed from the 20s or...
Was it Tiptoe Through the Tulips yet?
Or? That is it.
Okay, yep. Tiny Tim. That's
yeah.
That was a 60s novelty hit, very well known.
And so we see some kid dressed in old-timey clothes, inside dancing and laughing. She goes to the next window, and he's gone. She goes inside the house to look where he was standing, and then the kitchen door closes. She goes towards the kitchen. We see him run behind her down the hallway laughing. She follows him into Dalton's room. She sees a shoe sticking out of, like, the stand-up dresser. When she opens it,
it's just shoes.
Yeah, right. But he's hiding in the dresser. He jumps out and is giggling like, you found me, and runs away. Like he's a playful, fun spirit just trying to play hide and seek.
And yet still kind of scary.
Yeah, she burst out crying.
I mean, you don't know if he's going to think it's fun, playful to like stab you with a knife or something, right? And laugh the whole time. I mean, this is a horror movie. You don't know what's going
to
happen.
This is true. Then Josh comes home and sees Renee speaking to a priest. And he delivers this great line. He's like, this is the first line of a joke, right? A guy comes home, finds his wife at home with a priest. I thought that was awesome. The priest's name is Liam Martin, and he's an old friend of Renee's. But he does not play a major part in this movie at all. We see that Lorraine's there. Father Liam thanks Lorraine for the tea, and he leaves. Renee is at the dining room table and is explaining to Josh the things that have happened in the new house. Josh asks, what, you brought a priest to exorcise it? Renee's like, I don't know what else to do. And he laughs it off. He's like, when's the last time you were at church? And then Lorraine starts backing up Renee, saying that she's the experiences are real, and that she had a dream last night about things going on in this house. And when she's talking about the dream, we're zooming into her, we're zooming into Josh. Josh is in front of a blue and gray painting, so that when we see the face for the first time of the lipstick face demon that's right behind Josh, it really pops out because it's red right in front of blue and gray.
And that works well. I will say that. Though I feel like the demon is just a little too Darth Maul, you know, just a little too corny.
There's definitely a part of the fan community that refers to him as the Darth Maul demon.
I would prefer him to be a little more like unexpected in his appearance. He really looks like a child's drawing of a demon, which, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like too generic for my taste, but maybe I'm being too picky.
I wonder how long it would take to get him in that makeup. The guy in the makeup, though, is the composer of this film.
Oh, really?
The one that did the music is the lipstick face demon.
Well, that's a lovely touch.
I think so, too. That's pretty neat. Just then, we hear a ruckus happening in Dalton's room. They run to check, and the door is locked from the inside. There's a big slam. Josh finally bursts through the door, and the whole room is trash, and Dalton is now on the floor. The room is very blue tone, and there is a big red handprint on Dalton's sheet again. Renee begs Josh to help him, and Lorraine tells them that she knows somebody that can help. And then this is where we cut to my favorite characters in this movie, which are Specs and Tucker.
They are awesome.
Yeah.
I love how their relationship evolves over the course of the movie.
My gosh, yes.
They're such a cute couple.
They're cute. That's a funny way to put it. They do argue like a married couple all the time. That's funny. They're both in suits, and Tucker's eating a Hot Pocket. Renee asks where Elise is. Bex says, oh, they send us ahead to check things out. And Tucker goes, it weeds out the nut jobs, which is like awesome. They're arguing over the equipment and whose equipment is more important or what part of their role is more important in this process. Specs does not stop talking while Tucker's trying to investigate. So Tucker eventually tells him, hey, can I be left alone to look at this stuff? He's got what looks like a kid's slider toy with the little picture frames that like you click. Oh,
yeah, like the Viewmaster.
Yeah. But they're all different shades of colors that you would look through.
Probably was a Viewmaster, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm just going to point that out.
Yeah, well, the little part of it that had the cells in it with different colors totally was.
Yeah.
That little film strip thing.
But of course, he got very insulted when they point out that it's a Viewmaster. Like,
yeah. He says that it lets him view changes in UV light.
Early on, I felt like Specs was a cool, nerdy guy and Tucker was like an asshole. But I think I came to appreciate that they both mean well, but they just get on each other's nerves and have different styles. Yeah.
Yeah. We see them throughout the entire franchise, which I think is good.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah. So he's looking through different colors. And as the color changes from yellow to blue, we see who is labeled as the doll girl. But we see two of her. Like, it's her and her image is there twice. She has this freaking creepy smile as she's looking down the hallway. And he starts slowly backing away. And he goes to the group. And he tells them that, okay, you can call Elise now. This is real.
And that was very The Shining, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Like the twin girls in The Shining kind of scene, you know?
You know, it's interesting because everybody refers to them as twins. But when you listen to the interview that Jack Torrance is having for the position, they established that the girls were 8 and 10.
Oh.
So they were not supposed to be twins.
That's very strange.
It is, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of parallels to The Shining here, actually. You know?
There is.
There's a lot of things that are similar.
They also pull a lot from Poltergeist when doing this.
Oh,
movie.
Right.
They
have
a lot of references to it, which is pretty cool. So the next day, Elise shows up. She's super excited to be there. She's like, you must be Josh. And she's like, you've grown so much since I've last saw you. And Josh is confused by this. And he goes, oh, me and your mom have been friends for a really long time. Tucker explains everything that they tested for. Elise asks about the old house, and Specs says that he can go do it. Tucker's like, well, I'd have to go with you. Who would run the equipment? And Specs is like, I mean, it's not that hard to run the equipment. And he's like, I would disagree with you completely. And Elise is like, all right, boys, don't worry. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's wiring. I don't think there's a reason to go to this old house. Well, you could just tell that she senses something already.
But also, the characters are so great. Elise is also another great character, interesting and, you know, interesting personality as well.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that appealed to me about this movie, is that the characters have interesting personalities.
She kind of acts like she's their mother, like Specs and Tucker's mother.
Well, I feel like that's kind of it's not that uncommon for a dynamic with the boss and the younger employees. Like, I think that happens.
I love, yeah, the whole group is great. The paranormal investigators.
Well, I mean, everybody, like just the whole cast is really, the casting is interesting across the board. I was thinking that when I was watching. I was like, man, the casting is so interesting here. I actually feel like some of the acting was, in sort of a traditional sense, maybe not very good. That some of the acting felt kind of wooden to me.
Okay.
But it kind of worked. Like, I felt it kind of worked for the characters. Like, it just made the characters seem stoic, which worked.
I think the script was really good.
Yeah.
And the directing and the score.
It was pretty good. Yeah.
Sorry. So Elise asked for permission to go throughout the house. They have the line where she says, I assume that the other kids are with Lorraine, and they say, yeah, Lorraine's taking care of Foster and Callie. Elise, when they go into a room, Specs wants to turn on the light, but she doesn't let him. But she's not looking. She's like looking the other direction. She's like, don't keep the light off. Like, she could sense that he was about to turn the light on, which is pretty cool.
It seems like turning the light on scares the spirits away or something somehow.
Sure. Or at least her ability to detect them.
Well, but I mean, there are several scenes where you turn the light on and everything kind of disappears, like in this movie.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, towards the end, they're like, shine the light on Josh, shine the light on Josh.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And so then she starts talking to Dalton and then looks up. She feels it and she looks up above him, calls Specs over, and she starts whispering to Specs. And
very
he's drawing.
Excitedly.
Right. And he's using different color pencils to draw. And he keeps saying, slow down, slow down. But she's not getting any slower. He's trying to.
She's getting more and more frantic. Like, she's almost panicked.
Which panics Renee. Renee runs over, grabs the notebook out of their hands. And this is where we see the drawing of the lipstick face demon that is haunting Dalton. Everyone's in the living room and she goes into a little speech of like, normally I would do things slower, but I feel like there's no time for that. Assume by the fact that you've invited me into your house that I have permission to say these things, but what I'm about to say might go against any previous medical diagnosis that you've had before, but that she believes Dalton is not in a coma and had nothing to do with the ladder. That Dalton is the one being haunted and it's not their house. That's why it follow them to this next place. She tells him that Dalton has the ability to astral project, but because he's done it most of his life, he thinks it's him dreaming. And because he thinks it's a dream, he's not scared. And it's the fact that he's not scared that has let him go further into what she calls the further.
Upside down. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The upside down. This predates that. A little bit. Yeah, that's funny. Further into the further, that's how he's become lost.
How many other franchises can we name here?
So she tells them that there's many spirits that just want to live in an empty shell. They crave life. They miss being alive. But there's others that are more malevolent, which is a different movie, and have a more insidious agenda.
Yeah, you better get that word right, considering it's the title of the movie.
Title of the movie. Elise goes on to tell them that the demon seeks Dalton's body only to cause pain to others.
I can respect that.
Oh my gosh. Elise tells them that these entities need time and energy to get into Dalton's body, and the longer he is away, the weaker he gets. It's been 3 months. How long do you need?
That's a good point. It seems like
Renee asks if there's anything they can do about it. This is where Elise says, well, it's a little unorthodox and you'll have to follow me with it. And this is where Josh loses his cool. He's like, nope, it's over. Nope, you can leave now. And Renee's like, you don't believe me. And he goes, I moved houses for you. How do I not believe you? But this is scamming, or at least dangerous and exploitative.
But at least it doesn't last long. Like, at least he gets over it and comes back and like, yeah, okay, sorry.
Sure.
Well, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Because that night, he's in Dalton's bedroom. He seems to be kind of like praying, but not really, like begging him to come back to them. He looks at the pictures that he pointed out earlier when he was a superhero. He sees things that Elise has talked about. He sees the picture of the red-faced demon. He sees a picture of what could be described of him. He says, last night I watched myself sleep and then I floated away. This is the picture where he's wearing the cape. And he sees that, yes, this is him. And his view of astral projecting, there's pictures of the red-faced demon, and there's a picture of the red door.
Yeah, everything is revealed. And like you said, I guess we saw that earlier in the movie and we didn't have any idea what it meant, right?
Sure.
Chekhov's gun.
The red door is the name of the fifth movie.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how could the red door be scary after we've already been there in the first movie?
Yeah. I don't know.
I got to do something new, man.
The next day, the whole team is back.
I was thinking it should. When I was seeing that too, I couldn't help. As soon as they eventually, I'm skipping ahead slightly, but when they finally go through the door, my first thought is, you are about to enter the scary door.
Known as the Twilight Zone. Oh, man. All right. Now the whole team is back and they have a big setup with cameras. They're in Dalton's room. Elise tells them not to question what they're going to do and not to speak at all. She's going to be speaking really quietly, but Specs is going to be able to hear everything she says. He'll repeat it for them and write it down. She refers to Specs as Steven because his real name is Steven Fisher. And just for note taking, Tucker's full name is Tucker Croft. I had to look it up.
I wonder if he's related to Lara.
I don't know. Tucker puts a gas mask on Elise, and it is connected to headphones that Specs is wearing, so he can only hear her whispering.
Kinky.
The camera goes off several times during the scene, and Specs is taking notes really fast. They're calling out to Dalton, who does reply, telling that he can't see where he's at. Dalton is afraid to talk because if he is heard, they will hurt him. Dalton refers to the lipstick face man as the man with fire in his face. As the entity starts to curse them out, it seems to be hurting Elise as she is screaming, or she's shaking, and then she screams really loud when it hurts Speck's ears, because if the headphones are set up for him to hear a whisper, hear screaming, it would hurt his ears. Just then, Dalton's monitors start going off, like if his heart stopped, but it's because he's standing right next to them. He puts his hand on the table, which sends them all flying out, and then we see the doll face demon and her whole family like attacking them. The long-haired fiend grabs Renee, and Elise starts commanding the spirit to get out of Dalton's vessel, and then it all just seems to stop.
It's all very literal. All very literal.
Yeah.
Not a lot of symbolism in this movie.
Okay, yeah, sure. They're looking through old footage. Specs is laying on the kitchen counter with a steak put on his face. People say this is a reference to Poltergeist, where the steak on that kitchen counter crawled across the table. And it was like the photographer that it happened, you know, that like saw this happen and it freaked him out. We get Elise going to get the front door, and it's Lorraine at the front door, and Josh doesn't understand why she's there. And they have this whole scene where they explain to Josh that the reason their son can astral project is because Josh used to do it when he was 8 years old. And Lorraine at first didn't believe his claims, actually told him to just grow up until she started seeing pictures of Josh. And we go through this picture after picture of showing the figure, which is known as the Bride in Black, getting closer and closer to possessing him. And the last picture they took as a child has the Bride in Black's hand right above Josh's shoulder, and he looks just miserable in this picture. But they tell him to stop it. They had to suppress his memory and suppress his ability to astral project. And so I think maybe this is why, even though he's seen evidence, he struggles to believe it, because they brainwashed him to not believe it was real.
Some sort of post-hypnotic suggestion that he can't believe it. Yeah.
Right. So I think it gives him a little bit of a pass on the not believing thing.
I guess that's true. I wasn't thinking about it that way, but that's...
I mean, that's the only explanation I have to like his character as much as I do like his character.
Yeah. Well, he's very positive. I'll give him that. He's a very positive character.
Yeah. They tell him the only way to rescue Dalton is for Josh to astral project and go into the further to save him. And Elise goes over some rules. He has to remember why he's traveling. He's not allowed to draw attention to himself. And if they realize he's there, they will come for his physical body. So Elise puts Josh in a hypnotic trance. He thinks it's useless. I don't know what I'm doing. And then he realizes he's already astral projecting.
Yeah.
As he's looking at his body.
Kind of a cliche there, but.
Yeah. So in the further, Josh walks outside the front door. A lantern is magically there for him to get.
I don't think he's in the further yet. I think he's just astral projecting at this point. But
oh, it's not till he goes through the red door that he's in the further?
I think they even say that.
Okay.
Like,
I think
she even says, oh, he's reached the further or something like that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Okay, my bad. So I think it's interesting that when he starts astral projecting, there is magically a lantern there to help guide him.
I was assuming that that was something somehow provided by Elise's, you know, intervention.
Maybe. That's pretty neat, though. He thinks he sees Dalton, but it's another child, and that child points him to the direction of the old house. And this made sense to me, because the boy got lost from his body astral projecting while they were in the old house. When they moved houses, it did not make it easier for him to find his body again.
Oh, wow. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that at all.
I thought that was interesting. Like, at that moment, it's like, duh, let's go back to the old house.
Right.
So he goes in there. He sees the doll-faced girl and her family. They look like they're trapped in the end of their life, where one family member kills the rest of the family.
So that would kind of explain some things, like why that house was what triggered the problem, because he had been astral projecting, but it hadn't caused a problem until he was doing so in a house that was haunted by the spirits of this dead family, right? That had, that was why it became a problem when they moved into that house.
Sure, that makes sense. So he's there with spirits. He keeps calling out to Dalton. He's drawing attention to himself. He's asking the spirits where Dalton's at, which is not what he should be doing.
I was thinking the same time. I'm like, are you stupid? They just told you to try to blend in and not let them know that, you know, like, it's like, God, ask for directions from the damn spirits. What is wrong with you?
Josh eventually finds the red door from Dalton's drawings, and right as he's about to go in, he's stopped by the long-haired fiend. And while they're fighting, Elise tells Josh, you are stronger because you're alive, which gives Josh the power to yell, get away from me! And he shoves the long-haired fiend away. Then we're inside the door. I think you're right. This is where we make it to the further. We see this hallway, this red hallway lit by candles that was in Renee's dream earlier. Josh finds Dalton crying, and he's chained so he can't escape. Dalton points at the lipstick demon is there, and we see him sharpening his nails. He's got like this mirror with light bulbs around it, like someone, like a movie star putting on their makeup back in the 50s would look like.
And he's in like a little loft room that's kind of above and to the side of where Dalton is chained. But the thing that's kind of getting me about all this, if Dalton's been chained up in the demon's dungeon, why hasn't the demon been torturing him yet? Why has that not happened?
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, he's just scaring him. I don't know. It doesn't...
For 3 months, though? Like, he's not going to hurt him? I don't know either.
You're right.
It seemed weird to me. It didn't seem right. Felt off.
Sure.
I did like him sharpening his nails while listening to Tiny Tim. There's something very funny about that scene to me. And very, very, very corny. But at least funny.
So the demon and Josh start fighting. And in the real world, world, the house that they're in starts shaking. Josh and Dalton run away. They run back through the door. They start running towards the house, but spirits from everywhere start noticing them. They are able to pass by them. They make it back to the house. Elise is instructing them to shine the light on Josh and Renee to call him back. Dalton, Josh split up. Dalton is being chased by the lipstick-faced demon, and Josh is confronted by the bride in black from his childhood. Josh asks the bride, "What do you want from me?" and commands her to get away from him, and the bride just keeps smiling the whole time while holding this candle. We see the bride fade away, and Josh wakes up with a massive breath like he hasn't breathed in a long time. At this time, Dalton wakes up as well. The family is celebrating as they're all together. Tucker and Specs are packing up.
But it wasn't obvious that he made it.
Yeah.
And right then I was like, I'm not sure.
Sure. Sure.
I called it.
Yeah. Yeah. As Tucker and Specs are packing away the equipment, Tucker says he got some amazing photos, and that if Specs were to write a book, that the photos would be the main selling point. Then they argue over what would be the main selling point, which is funny.
Well, no, I mean, it was cute because he finally gave him credit. They gave each other credit in a way, right?
Sure.
Like, which was very nice. It was a sweet resolution.
Yeah, but they still argued over who was more important.
Well, that's how their friendship works.
That's just true. Okay, that's funny. We see Dalton eating with Lorraine and Renee, and they joke about how hungry he is, and he tells them that he's really tired, and Renee says that he's not allowed to be tired and she's never gonna let him sleep again. Josh thanks Elise for showing him a new world, and Elise tells him that he's been there before and she just had to remind him that he was there. Josh is looking through the pictures, kind of smirking. He hands the pictures back to Elise, and then she just senses that something's wrong. So she snaps a picture of him. He yells, "Why did you do that? You know I hate pictures being taken of me." Then he starts to strangle Elise and he kills her. And then we see that Renee comes around to, you know, check on them. She sees Elise dead in the chair, and she sees the photo, the last photo taken on the camera, which shows the bride in black and does not show Josh.
And that was what I figured. Yeah, I figured it was going to happen. I was waiting for it.
And then Josh appears behind her, grabs her on the shoulder, and she gasps in fear, and the movie cuts to black, and then we start rolling the credits.
Yeah.
At the end of the credits, we see an image of the bride in black holding the candle, and she blows the candle out.
Oh, I don't think I watched all the way to the end.
No? Oh, okay.
That's, so again, it's a happy ending. A woman gets to live again. You know, Dalton's alive. Everybody who is alive is happy.
Yeah.
My comment would be, I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
Like I said, I felt like it was very, very literal and pretty simple and, like I said before, a bit corny.
Sure.
Acting wasn't entirely great, but that didn't really hurt it because, like I said, it kind of worked for the characters. But there was a lot of it felt borrowed. Okay, maybe it was homages to other movies, but a lot of it felt a little bit borrowed, a little bit cliche. I would say I did enjoy it, but at the same time, I would not classify it as like a very, I wouldn't put it in my top 10, you know what I mean?
Sure. I like this one a lot though. Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. I would be interested to see the sequel. I just I do think it was simple, not much metaphor to it, not much, you know, symbolism, and it could have done with a little more subtlety, I think.
Sure. I get what you're saying. Yeah. I like it a lot. I like where the next one goes. It expands with a couple more characters, but we do get to see this family again, which is fun.
That's good.
Yeah. Because, I mean, left on a cliffhanger.
I know. I was going to say, we gotta do something about the old lady who has now switched genders. We ought to get some sort of scene where she
thinks the old lady switched genders.
Oh, she may have been trans. Or he may have been.
Right.
Although if he had been, it wouldn't make much sense. Never mind.
No. Yeah. The Bride in Black. Yeah, you'll learn about the Bride in Black's history.
Okay.
Well, guys, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Nightmare Echoes, and we hope you listen again.